I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you've been to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania in the past few years, you no doubt have had a chance to see the Gettysburg Cyclorama. And our guests this hour have been very instrumental in helping to restore that cyclorama and in putting together a most impressive, compelling book that is titled The Gettysburg Cyclorama, The Turning Point of the Civil War on Canvas. Not only does it tell us about the important battle, very important battle that was fought there July of 1863, but it also looks at the artists who came to Gettysburg, the photos that were taken, the generals who were spoken to, how the picture was changed, how there were four Gettysburg cycloramas and only one remains. It's really an interesting and very, very detailed look at the whole cyclorama. Chris Brenneman and Sue Boardman are our guests. They are licensed battlefield guides at the Gettysburg National Military Park, and those guides are not to be surpassed. They're just wonderful. Chris, as part of his job working for the Gettysburg Foundation, has spent hundreds of hours studying the cyclorama and identifying all of the intricacies, and there are so many of them, as you realize when you look at the book, within the painting. And Sue was the historical consultant for the Gettysburg Foundation for the massive project to conserve and restore the Gettysburg cyclorama. We'll be welcoming phone calls for both of our guests, both Sue and Chris. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Sue, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good afternoon, Kathleen.
Yes, good afternoon. And Chris, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. I know both of you, before we talk about the book, are licensed battlefield guides. We had a great trip with listeners a couple of years ago to Gettysburg. The guides you have at Gettysburg are marvelous. Tell me, how much education do you have to get to be one of those guides, and how both of you became guides? It's an interesting job, I think.
Well, it's very difficult.
Is it?
It took me almost 5 years of studying.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Mm-hmm. They have a very rigorous testing process.
Huh.
What they do is every 2 years, approximately, they give a written test, and somewhere between 150 and 200 people take the written test, but they only accept the 20 best scores.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can get 90% right, and you're not even close to making the cutoff. You have to get 97-98% on that test just to make the cut.
Huh.
And then over the next 2 years, they give oral exams where they have basically the guide candidates take a guide and a ranger on a tour of the field.
Huh.
And they're writing down, you know, everything you did good, bad, indifferent. They go over everything at the end of the tour. You have about a month to work on it, and then you do it again, and you either pass or fail.
Huh. Oh, I'm so glad I asked this question. No wonder all the guides are so good. They really put you through the ringer, don't they?
Well, but you know, Kathleen, we come from all walks of life. This is usually an ancillary job to what most people do. For example, I was an emergency department nurse.
Really?
Teachers, lawyers, physicians, truck drivers. But what we all have in common is a very deep and abiding passion for this place.
Yes. And I can feel it. When we were there, I felt the same way. It's just a very important place to visit. And your book is beautiful, and it's obvious that you spent just as many years, if not more, that you studied to be a licensed battlefield guide, that you spent examining this cyclorama. What a work of love, and what an endeavor this was, wasn't it, Sue?
It was one of those things that I like to call probably my greatest opportunity of my life. I was a nurse and that was great. I became a guide, that was great. But the opportunity to work with the conservators was just unequaled. It was so fascinating to watch them work, to research the painting, to dig up little historic tidbits that they needed to know to drive their work. So it was just a really intensive but very rewarding job.
Yeah. Whoever wants to take this, go right ahead. But give us a little bit of the history, which is also fascinating, of cycloramas in Europe and also in the United States. What was depicted? And I guess they were a big form of entertainment, weren't they?
They were. Cyclorama's actually got their start over in Europe, and it was a Scotsman in 1785 named Robert Barker who tried to capture the city of Edinburgh all around him, and he's the one who patented the whole idea. But it didn't take off right away. It wasn't until the mid-1800s that Europe really fell in love with cycloramas, and not too terribly long after that, that one of those European cycloramas came to America. It was shown at the World's Fair in 1876 in Philadelphia, and that seemed to capture the Americans' imagination, and it was called the first art for the masses. And so that's how it got its start in this country.
And who decided that a cyclorama should be done of Gettysburg, the Battle of Gettysburg?
That was a decision made between the promoter who hired the artist and the artist himself. But the promoter's idea was that although America responded well to the European cycloramas, he thought they would respond even better to their own. So the best theme at that time, given it was only 20-some years after the Great War, that was on everyone's mind. So that was a logical choice.
And he and the artist, has pronounced his name, I don't speak French,
Philippe Poteau, if you want to do it with the French accent, but Philippe Poteau is American, that's fine.
Okay. So he was French, and he was this his first American cyclorama, and why was he chosen to be the artist?
It was his first American cyclorama, but why he was chosen was he was the one who created the one Americans saw at the Philadelphia Expo. It was called the Siege of Paris, and he and his father created that one.
And evidently he did, Chris, four of these, right? But the one at Gettysburg is the only one that has survived. You would have thought that considering how enormous these were and all the time it took to put together and how historical that people would have taken better care of them.
You would hope, but there were four copies. Only one had survived. But it took a lot of, it took a really big building. It took a lot of expense to, you know, keep one of these paintings. And they were like the movie theaters of their day. They were a really big hit. But then when motion pictures got invented, everybody wanted to see pictures that moved. And people stopped going to see the cycloramas, and they weren't making any money. And that's when a lot of them got neglected and unfortunately just didn't survive.
There were also, when you went to these, and let's start with the one in Chicago where it first opened, that you got some kind of a historical almost playbill, Sue, which those have become important historical records as well.
They have, and in part because we don't really know the full extent of what cycloramas were created for our country. We knew there was a number of, especially Civil War. So those playbills or those souvenir programs, you know, one turns up for the Battle of Vicksburg, then aha, we know there was a Battle of Vicksburg cyclorama. In some cases, that's the only way we know they existed. So, and they also were important because inside of them was a diagrammatic key to the painting, which would assist the viewer in knowing what they were looking at.
And we're looking at this particular cyclorama with how many figures? It's enormous.
It's about 20,000.
No kidding. 20,000?
Which was accurately portrayed because the battle at, known today as Pickett's Charge did number approximately 20,000 players.
So this Philippe Toll came over to the United States, and there was a photographer, right, who took pictures of the Gettysburg area, and then he met with some of the generals who were still alive.
Yes, we know he interviewed General Hancock, General Doubleday, and General Webb, as well as some of the other, you know, non-generals, but other people that were in the battle.
And so he was trying to get a sense from them. I mean, what kinds of questions would he ask them? How did they contribute to the cyclorama, these generals?
Well, all three of those generals were right in the area at the end of Pickett's Charge. So I think he was, you know, what did they see? What did it look like? They were right in the center of the action. And all three generals are depicted in the painting, by the way.
Tell me about, we may have skipped a question that's important here that I should have done a little bit earlier, but for people who are not familiar with the Battle of Gettysburg, the subtitle on your book is that it's the turning point of the Civil War, and now we see the turning point on canvas. Why was it the turning point of the Civil War, Sue?
Well, the Union Army had been pretty soundly defeated in a lot of the major engagements of the first 2 years of the Civil War. So when General Lee attempted to end the war by bringing his army, his southern army, into the north to gain a political victory. He was a bit surprised at the ability of the Union soldiers to hold them back, probably because they were fighting for their own land. But that victory in the north, along with an almost very soon after victory at the in Vicksburg, Mississippi, also a Union victory, those two events turned the tide, gave the Union Army the morale they needed to continue to withstand the onslaught of the Confederacy, and it did eventually wear out the Confederate forces, and a war of attrition was finally won by the Union.
And why was the battle there? Why in Gettysburg?
Well, it was not intended to be here. It was supposed to be the Battle of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, our capital, because Harrisburg was a rail center and a communication center. But the armies inadvertently and quite by accident engaged here, and it evolved into the massive conflict that it was.
And when we look at what the predictions were earlier on for how long this war was going to last, evidently a lot of people were thinking that this has gone on a lot longer than anybody would have imagined in 1861.
Definitely. A lot of people thought the war was going to be over in a few months. Ends up taking almost 4 years. And by the point of Gettysburg, you know, I think most people have resigned themselves to the fact that it's going to be a long war. But Gettysburg really turns the tide, you know, especially of public opinion. The North is losing so many battles, but now they finally won one. It kind of gives them hope that the end is in sight. And I think that's a real important reason why it helps turn the course also.
Mm-hmm. So many people lost their lives. How many people lost their lives at Gettysburg?
The estimates are between 7 and 9,000 outright.
Goodness gracious.
And then many more wounded and some mortally wounded. So total casualties, and that's counting wounded, missing, killed, or taken prisoner, it numbers 51,000, which was a third of the number of men engaged in this fight.
Oh, that's just...
Isn't it heartbreaking?
It is heartbreaking. It is completely heartbreaking. And in terms of the battlefield itself, we'll get back to the cyclorama, but at what point did this become a national monument? I'm always amazed how much of it's all restored. It's there. You just use your imagination and you see the cyclorama and you can imagine the battle because you're standing right there where it was. It's all there.
That vision of preservation actually lay with the veterans themselves.
Really?
Before the end of the war, there was already a movement to acquire the important features on the Union line, and the Union veterans owned that ground for 30 years. They monumented it. They laid out the park. So it was their initiative that preserved it.
Mm-hmm. And the cyclorama, the one at Gettysburg, let's go back to four of them. There was one for Chicago. There was one for Boston. Where were all of these cycloramas?
Well, Chicago and New York, Philadelphia, Boston were the four cities that had the four Philippeteaux cycloramas. Also, there were other imitation copies made of the Battle of Gettysburg by other artists, sort of knockoff copies. And there could have been as many as 10 of those floating around the country at one point. And that made Sue's job very difficult as she tried to track which paintings got moved to which cities, because the advertisements aren't going to tell you that it's not the original.
Right.
Kudos to her. She had to do a lot of legwork to track down where all these paintings have been over the years.
Where did she have to go, Sue?
It was a lot of repositories and newspapers were a big thing. But I also collected cyclorama memorabilia, so I also turned to my own collection.
You collect cyclorama memorabilia?
Mm-hmm. I had a lot of those souvenir programs from various Civil War paintings and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's interesting. So the one that is now in Gettysburg, it's my understanding, is the only one that's left that's real, right?
Of the Gettysburgs, correct.
What happened to them?
The first one, the Chicago painting, was eventually sent on the road to show, and in Sioux City, Iowa, in 1894, a typhoon blew the roof off the building and destroyed it. The Philadelphia version was destroyed when the building collapsed on it as they were removing it, and the New York one had a long run, but it fell into disarray and then bankruptcy, and it was eventually cut apart. And interesting vignettes out of the painting were framed and given to veterans to hang in their meeting halls.
Oh, Well, it came to some good end then.
Right, and they're showing up now on auctions. The park has several pieces, and there are others around.
How do you transport something like this? Because I understand that you had to transport Paul, is that his name, Paul, mm-hmm. sent these across the ocean. I mean, this is a huge, huge thing. How do you transport such a thing?
Well, what they did, they painted it in a giant round studio. And the studio had like a railroad track that ran around the bottom of the painting.
Huh.
And they had giant scaffolding towers on wheels that could run on that track. And the towers were like four stories high, so guys could be painting it simultaneously at different heights. When they were all done, they attached a giant spool to that tower, cut a seam in the painting, attached the seam to that spool, and then rolled it up into a giant roll, and then shipped it in a giant crate.
Oh, my goodness.
Probably about 4 to 6 tons that would have weighed.
Wow. And I'm trying to think of how long it would take to do the Battle of Gettysburg. Was this years and years in the making, Sue?
It was a five-year project.
Five years.
Upon being hired, the artist spent a year doing research. So he'd come to the battlefield, make sketches, walk the field, talk to participants. Then he would study maps. He had the photos taken. And so that first year was him doing that legwork and then doing the preliminary drawings. Once he was ready to start the actual cyclorama painting, his team of artists, whom he had assembled, would begin. So each of the four versions took 1 year apiece. So a year for the prep, and then one for each of the four paintings.
And the paintings changed, didn't they? Because he would speak to some vets, and they would say, I think he didn't get this quite right.
You read that book.
I did. Yes.
Yeah. He tried to make corrections as he went along, and most of the time he did catch some of the more glaring errors.
Mm-hmm. But some of them are there. Who are the two brothers who we meet something like 19 years later, and there they are with their backs really to the action, and their wounds have already been dressed, which wouldn't have been the case. But they were two veterans that he ran into, right?
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you want to take it?
Yeah, that's the Bird brothers, Robert and Peter Bird. And when the artist, Philip Bateau, was here in Gettysburg doing his taking photographs of the terrain, touring the battlefield and taking notes, the Bird brothers were also in town for a reunion.
Oh.
And he met them at their reunion. Seemed like nice guys, so he painted them into the picture. And what I think is interesting is they have gray hair.
Right, right. They're a little older.
I think that's the way Philip Bateau saw them in 1882, not the way they would have looked in 1863.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. If this is the kind of conversation, I'm sure that many of you have been to Gettysburg and have seen this cyclorama, and I hope you've seen it fairly recently because it was restored. We're talking with Sue Boardman and Chris Brenneman, and they are the authors of the Gettysburg Cyclorama, The Turning Point of the Civil War on Canvas. It has a fascinating history, and of course it depicts the most important battle of Gettysburg, a turning point of the Civil War, which you see on canvas. I had no idea there were that many figures involved. It's just amazing. It's a huge number of people. It makes you feel as though you are there. I don't think you need a moving thing or moving pictures. You're in the center of this painting that's all around you, and you really do feel as though you're on the battlefield. And then you walk outside the visitor center, and you're on the battlefield, too. So it's an extraordinarily historic and important place in American history and well worth a visit. So they've done this book, which looks at the restoration process and examines in a very detailed fashion all of the parts of this cyclorama and gives you the history of what happened to the painting and why the Civil War battle there is so important. They're interesting because they're both guides, too, and it's quite an elaborate process to become a guide at Gettysburg. We welcome your phone calls. If you've been there, what did you think of this cyclorama? We'd love to hear from you. Or if you have questions about it, believe you me, they can answer any question you have. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. 8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Our guests are both licensed battlefield guides at the Gettysburg National Military Park, and Chris, while working for the Gettysburg Foundation, has spent hundreds of hours studying the cyclorama and identifying what's in the painting. Sue was the historical consultant for the Gettysburg Foundation for the massive project to conserve and restore the Gettysburg cyclorama. So we'll talk about what's happened to that cyclorama at Gettysburg and the movement to restore as well. To you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we welcome phone calls. We're speaking this hour about the Gettysburg Cyclorama, the turning point of the Civil War on canvas, a beautiful book, important historical book as well, with the authors Chris Brenneman and Sue Boardman. And let's go to Jim in Musket Bay as our first caller for both of you. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
You got me on there? Sorry.
Yes, we do.
A long-time listener. I'm not a very good speaker, so I'll try to be brief. My great-great-great uncle was General Dan Sickles, one of the generals there at Gettysburg. And I just want to say we went to Gettysburg with my grandmother, who, you know, her mother was a Sickles. And we had a general idea of who Dan Sickles was, but it was actually the guides at Gettysburg that opened up this whole history for me and my family with regards to him. They knew so much about even this general. And I just want to urge any of the listeners to get to Gettysburg. It's such an incredible piece of our history. Mm-hmm. It really is a part of who we are as Americans. And what they'll celebrate, see, and experience there is just so beyond what when you go in there, your expectations are more than fulfilled. So it's just something I would just urge people to look into. And who knows? I mean, 51,000 people injured or wounded or killed. You know, it's a story that probably belongs to anyone, you know, that had family at that time. They're going to have a story there that they may not even know about, you know.
So you discovered all kinds of things about your great-great-great, however many back, grandfather.
Yeah. It was, and then we found out, you know, I mean, his leg's in the Smithsonian, so if people want to go see General Sickles' leg, it got blown off in the Civil War.
It's in the Smithsonian?
Yes, it's at the Smithsonian, and he was our ambassador to France, and he had a lot to do with the funding of Gettysburg and getting all, just stuff that we learned later on when we explored this piece of our family's heritage, and, you know, and he lived till he was 95. He didn't die until after the beginning of World War One, and, you know, he was in New York, there's big parades, just all that from Gettysburg.
Yeah.
I guess that's my point.
Yeah,
get to Gettysburg, learn about it.
Right, absolutely. And a real tribute to the guides there, Chris and Sue, that you're the ones who knew all about him.
Well, let me tell you, his ancestor is credited, actually, with the creation of Gettysburg National Military Park.
Oh, my.
Because as a congressman, he's the one who crafted and pushed the bill through that allowed the government to take over the land from the veterans. So today we visit the park because General Sickles had that foresight.
Mm. And you must know, both of you know the details here, but I know, Chris, that part of your job was identifying, and the book is filled with all of these little parts of the painting so that you know the farmhouse or you have an idea of the general and the forces and who these people were. Painstaking detail, fascinating history. How did you discover all of that?
Well, it was a long process. As part of my job, I work in the painting, ushering people in and out of it every day. And I've heard the program that they do with the painting probably 5,000 to 7,000 times. truthfully, to me, I just hear blah, 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 blah. But all that time, I'm looking at the painting, and I'm wondering, what is that little group of guys really far away? Or which farm is that off in the distance? And over the years, I just kept trying to track down as many things as I could until I had practically, you know, half of a book worth of information. And that's when I got with Sue, who has been working with the painting for years before our building opened, because she was working with the restoration crew. And I just want to say that her love of the painting is contagious. I heard her lectures. I heard her talk about the painting. And, you know, I was really impressed, and I just wanted to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just my own natural curiosity. And just looking at that painting, there's so much going on, and I tried to identify everything I could possibly find. Which, by the way, in answer to your caller, it does show the farm where General Sickles lost his leg. He's wounded on the second day of the battle, and the painting is the third day of the battle. But it does mention the fact that Sickles moved his men into this area, and this is where he lost his leg. Also, while we're talking about things in the painting, the artist snuck Abraham Lincoln into the painting.
Yeah, I saw that part of it. Why was he in there?
Well, he said the wounded president, he's wounded when you see him, and he's being carried toward the hospital. And the artist said the wounded president symbolized a wounded nation. So that's why he said he snuck Lincoln in there. But I just thought I should mention that, since that's where you're going tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And I'll never forget the moment in my life where we were on this tour and I discovered it was pouring rain. Not every day. It was usually sunny, but it was rainy on this one day. And I discovered that where Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address was not too far away from where our bus was. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't leave here until I stand there. So some of us walked up there, and it just moved me to the very depth of my being to stand where Abraham Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address and to imagine, talk about loss of limb, our guide, who had been in World War I, as a matter of fact, and was a marvelous guide, talked about the stench. So many people had lost limbs that when he gave that address, you could smell all of that in the air still.
My, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, Kathleen, while we're talking about cyclorama, you know, Gettysburg really came under the spotlight when we opened our beautiful painting. Wisconsin's about to experience that same wonderful feeling in just a few years, because the Atlanta cyclorama, created there in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, is undergoing the same conservation treatment that ours did, and they're going to have a wonderful reopening, and all the eyes of the world will be there for a while. And they'll hear about Wisconsin's art colony.
Excellent. All right. And I think we'll hear more about that from a caller in just a moment. I do, though, Sue, want to talk about what happened to the painting when it was at, you got it from Boston, I believe. There was, and I saw the building when I was at Gettysburg where the cyclorama used to be. At what point did you decide, did everybody decide this painting really needs to be restored? And that must have been a mammoth project as well. Where was it restored? How was it restored?
Well, it was part of a much larger project known as the 1999 General Management Plan, which provided for the new Museum Visitor Center. So it was only logical, with that being the park's largest artifact in its collection, to make that the centerpiece. So in order to do that, it then just led naturally into it needs to be restored.
Mm-hmm.
And there was it was difficult because funding was there, but it was going to be a very expensive project. We had to restore so much of it. The sky had been missing 14 feet.
I saw that. So you had to find out from newspaper reports what the sky was actually like that day.
Right, because it is a relatively historically accurate painting, so you didn't want to just make that up.
Right.
So the sky needed restored. There was a 14-foot vertical section that had been lost to years and years before. There was no diorama or any of the features that make it a true cyclorama in place at the time the restoration began in 2005. So it was a three-year, very intensive project to put all the parts back that made it a true cyclorama.
Mm. And did you have to have it in a round building so you put it up and work that way with it?
In part, they took it down in the old building and reopened seams that had already been in the painting from a previous sort of a half conservation. And so each one of the 28 segments was worked on separately, and then it was reconstructed in the new building while the new building was also being constructed. And that's when it was finished.
Mm-hmm. And now, when you look at it now, skip a film, there is a whole lot to be said for standing there and looking at this cyclorama. It's mesmerizing, isn't it?
It's breathtaking. You walk
yes.
up those stairs, and it just catches your breath. And I've seen it so many times, and it still does that for me.
Mm-hmm. So how many artists were employed in the restoration process, and how many artists were involved with the initial painting?
Well, initially they had approximately, I think, 15 to 20 people in the team that helped Philip to paint it. And Sue can confirm this, but I believe the restoration team was also about 15 to 20 people.
Correct.
And they had to go through, I'm sure, some... Well, we haven't talked very much about the artist, the French artist, learning about Gettysburg. The photos that were taken were very important. Tell me about the photographer who was hired and the pictures that were important for Philippe Auteuil's cyclorama.
Well, the artist's name is William Tipton, and at the time of the battle, William was 16 years old and worked with another town photographer studio, the Tyson Brothers. So eventually, Tipton purchased the Tyson Brothers out and made his entire living for decades photographing the battlefield. So he was the right guy at the right time that was here in 1882 when the artist came to Gettysburg. They worked together. They built a roughly 15-foot wooden platform out on the focal point on Cemetery Ridge. And Mr. Tipton took 10 photographs that, if laid end-to-end, would create the entire panorama.
Oh. And what's interesting is that the town hasn't changed all that much since those years, has it? It still has a feeling of time standing still.
It really does. About 40% of our current homes are wartime homes.
40%?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Even our population hasn't increased that considerably. There were 2,400 roughly folks during the battle. There's only about just under 10,000 now.
Huh. Interesting. I want to thank you, Jim, so much for calling in. It was wonderful to hear from you. And let's go to Gary in Milwaukee. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you. I appreciate one of your guests mentioning the Milwaukee Atlanta cyclorama. By the way, around here, those of us who talk about cycloramas generally use the word panoramas and panorama painters. Between 1886 and 1889, 4 years' time, there was a group of men and a couple of women who were involved in the painting of about seven of these great panoramas. And at one time, they had one of these circular studios, which was mentioned, and it had the... train track inside, as well as the tall scaffolding on which they would paint. It happens that the one of the directors of the Milwaukee project was an artist named Frederick William Heine. And Heine created daily diaries for about all his life. He came to Milwaukee in 1886, and he and another gentleman were hired by a businessman whose last name was Wiener, and Wiener was just interested in making money, but he saw a way of employing these men to make these panoramas or cycloramas, which then traveled around the United States. And Heine kept these diaries with very exacting, very tiny writing, his own version of German. And these were donated, numerous, about probably 18 or 20 finely written books in his handwriting to the Milwaukee County Historical Society. And some years ago, they were unearthed, and there was a project which went on for a number of years in which these diaries were translated. And it gave very interesting information about the painting of the panoramas here in Milwaukee, as well as a daily life. And that project came to an end, but one individual in Milwaukee is still translating those diaries for free and no cost. He calls it transcribing because he's of German ancestry. He came to Milwaukee about 11 years ago, was involved in this translation project, and he transcribes them into German. And then initially there were others who would take his German and translate them into English. But if anyone's interested, if they contact the Milwaukee County Historical Society, they can see the compilation of information that this gentleman in Milwaukee has already transcribed.
Oh, thank you. That's fascinating, Gary.
It's an ongoing project.
Yeah.
Gary, that was a wonderful description. That was Michael Kuchar's work. And he is an amazing man. And he has the same kind of interesting wit that Heine has in the diary. So if you ever have the chance to hear Michael Kuchar speak about the diaries and his transcriptions, do it. It's very entertaining.
Now, how do you know all about all of this, too, Sue?
Oh, well, once a cyclorama geek, always a cyclorama geek.
Of course. I didn't think of that.
I visited that beautiful city of Milwaukee just to hear Michael Kuchar speak about the diary.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, Sue, you are a fan. And was this primarily a business when Gettysburg was done? Obviously, it was historically very important, but there were a lot of these being built. Were they thought of by business people to be money-making attractions, like building a movie theater? Was that the reason that they were initially done, or were these civic-minded people who said, we got to have a historical reference here, and let's make it big and have people come and remember history?
They were commercial.
They were?
Yes. And sometimes politically motivated. It's often been said that when General Logan was considering a run for the presidency, that's how the Atlanta came to pass, the Atlanta Cyclorama,
yeah.
And he's in it. So I don't know if that's ever been refuted or not.
Huh. Are you still with us, Gary? Do you know about that? Oh, Gary's not there anymore. And did they make a lot of money?
They did. In their heyday, in the early years, they did.
Well, isn't it, I don't know, but there must have been quite a bit of interest in history as well. If you're going to do the Battle of Gettysburg, I mean, it's a difficult cyclorama. It's a battle that was horrendous. So many people lost their lives. So it's not really entertaining, is it? What would draw people to see it?
Well, the sense of taking you to another place without having to leave town. That was a lot of the big draw of the cycloramas. Besides battle scenes, there were also, you know, nature scenes, religious scenes. It was like transporting yourself in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if, yeah, I mean, is it entertaining to see a painting like that? I guess maybe it'd be better to say you're enriching yourself by
yes.
seeing a painting like that.
Right.
You know, learning about something. And, I mean, it is entertaining in that it's something new. It's taking you to someplace you could never be otherwise.
Yeah. And I guess I read in your book, Sue, that a lot of veterans came to see these.
They did.
Civil War veterans.
They absolutely did. And there are accounts that speak about the veterans being there and seeing it and becoming immersed in the scenery and being... And people witnessing them crying, just being so caught up in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And others said that, you know, you'd use the key in the program to tell what you were looking at in the painting, but if you were lucky, you might be there on a night when a veteran was in attendance, and they would almost always spontaneously contribute. You know, they begin to talk about their experiences. And I cannot imagine a more fascinating way
yes.
to experience a cyclorama.
Right. Yeah, wouldn't that have been fascinating?
Yeah.
It's like going to Gettysburg with a guide who had
yeah.
somebody in the Civil War, somebody who fought there, you know, the
yeah.
family stories that come down. Thank you so much, Gary, for your call. We're going to welcome more phone calls. We're speaking with the authors of, if you're a Civil War buff and if you're interested, well, who isn't interested in the Battle of Gettysburg, the turning point of the Civil War? This is the Gettysburg Cyclorama, the turning point of the Civil War on canvas. And our guests are fascinating people, Chris Brenneman and Sue Boardman. They are licensed battlefield guides at the Gettysburg National Military Park. And Chris has worked for the Gettysburg Foundation and has studied the cyclorama very, very carefully and found barns and you can probably look at every little tiny part of that and tell you what it is and who it is. Sue was the historical consultant for the Gettysburg Foundation for the project to conserve and restore the Gettysburg Cyclorama, and it turns out that she's quite a cyclorama aficionado as well. So we'll take more phone calls in a moment. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Gene in Big Bend is with us. Hi, Gene.
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead, Gene.
I was My wife and I visited the Soviet Union in 1988, just at the time of Perestroika. And one of the things that we saw there was a cyclorama for the Battle of Borodino, where the Russians were routed by Napoleon, but he failed to satisfy and failed to conquer Russia.
Hmm. That's a beautiful cyclorama. And it's a pretty popular one. It might be the only one that's currently on display in Russia.
Hmm. So you have seen it then?
I have not seen it. I have read pictorial photographic books on it.
And what did you think when you saw it, Gene?
That was very, very impressive. And the history of the work was done, I think, in Austria or in Germany, probably much later, but it is a beautiful work, and it was very, very interesting to see. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the call. In terms of the artistic quality, which cycloramas, Sue, in the world are considered the best?
Oh, wow. I think that's in the eye of the beholder,
because
I'm going to say Gettysburg.
Yeah, sure you would.
Sorry.
Well, we have a bit of a leg up now that ours has been restored, too.
Right.
I've seen pictures of that one in Russia, and it does look very, very cool, but you can see some damage. You can see that it probably is in need of a little TLC. Atlanta is an excellent-looking cyclorama, and once they're done with the restoration, it's going to be even better. But I, too, think Gettysburg is the best, but I'm a little impartial also.
Was there any kind of disagreement as to whether or not this should be restored? Did some people just say, hey, it's not worth it?
Well, you know, there is a trend, and it's a sensible one, to appeal to the younger generation. And as we all know, the younger generation is highly connected to electronics.
Right.
So there was a question. It wasn't so much... it was just a kind of a wonderment as to whether investing all that money for a static painting would hold any attraction for the young. But actually, they did a beautiful compromise in the fact that they have a wonderful AV program connected to our cyclorama, where you actually hear voices, you hear quotes from the soldiers, you hear Glenn Close, our narrator, the celebrity, telling the story as you look at the canvas, and its lighting is beautiful. But then you also have a few moments after the program is over to just stand and appreciate the painting for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has that broad appeal. And I think that was a great decision.
And tell me a little bit more, Chris, about some of the many intricacies. You've mentioned a few that you found within the painting and how you maybe had to dig and do a lot of digging to find out what you were looking at.
Well, a lot of it, you know, I used maps. I studied the terrain. I used, you know, modern maps, maps from the time of the battle. I walked the field and just tried to line things up. So there was a little bit of legwork. But a lot of what I found out came from those old keys, the round drawing that would come with the program. And it had little numbers on it, and you'd look, and it would say, okay, number 15 is General Lee, and number 28 is General Meade, and so forth. Well, what was interesting, as I went through those, I found that they changed the descriptions of people as the paintings were shown in different cities. And what I found out, we pretty much knew this, they were marketing the painting to the locals.
Oh.
So the one that was in Chicago, they're mentioning more guys from the Midwest.
Oh, yeah.
The one in Philadelphia, they're mentioning more guys from Pennsylvania and so forth. But what really interested me was a couple of the people that got mentioned didn't really seem like they were that famous to me. It mentions a General Martin, and there is no General Martin in the battle. When I did some research, I found a Captain Martin. And, you know, usually in the grand scheme of things, you're not going to mention a captain in the story of the Battle of Gettysburg. But what I found out, it was the Boston painting. And in 1884, when the painting came out, Augustus Martin was the mayor of Boston.
Oh.
So it's not who you were in 1863. It's who you were in 1884 that became important. And I found a couple other individuals like that I thought was really interesting. Also, the fact that some of these guys, the programs, it says notable people that visited the painting. And General Captain A.P. Martin was one of those people.
So some
of the guys that actually visited went on to get mentioned in the key later on. So that was pretty neat. They were actually taking the suggestions of the people that were actually there and using them to keep the painting,
right,
you know, as accurate as they could.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them. That's really a good thing. If you want to, we have a few more minutes and a couple lines open if you want to join our conversation. We're talking about the wonderful Gettysburg Cyclorama, the turning point of the Civil War on canvas, and hearing about the restoration process and the fascinating history behind this and cycloramas in general. Do we have any historical reflections from Paul Philip Toe about how moved he was or what his thoughts were about the battlefield that he was visiting and ultimately painting?
Not that we've been able to discover, which is really kind of frustrating and unfortunate.
Huh.
He was from Paris, France. He and his father first went into business together. His father had a studio in Belgium. So it's quite conceivable that a lot of his written accounts and that sort of thing are still there in Europe, and they're just out of our reach.
Oh, well, maybe you'll find those, and that'll be another book.
That'll be wonderful.
And in terms of a restoration, Sue, how long will this restoration last? Will it be hundreds of years, or will you need to do another one in 100 years?
Well, let's try to be objective and not get hope into this. But anyway, actually, this painting has several things going for it that it never had before. And one of those is a maintenance plan. And another one is the controlled museum environment, 50% constant humidity, 70% constant temperature, so there won't be shrinking and stretching that tends to loosen paint.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in the HVAC system and the environment that it's in, I think there's a potential for a lot of longevity from this particular conservation treatment.
Mm. Are both of you from Gettysburg?
I'm not. I'm from Danville, Pennsylvania, which is central.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up nearby in York, Pennsylvania.
In terms of the number of people who visit Gettysburg every year, I'm just on this campaign to get everybody to go to Gettysburg. It's been Springfield, Illinois, and Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I've been talking about it a lot the last couple of days. Do you get huge numbers of visitors every year?
Yes. I just heard the superintendent say last night that we get somewhere between 1 and 2 million, but we're not good at counting them.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
And a lot of foreign visitors, too?
We do. It's really surprising. Australians, Europeans.
Hmm.
It's interesting how international we are.
Mm-hmm. And what about southern and northern?
I think we get a good mix of both. Maybe as a percentage, we get a lot of southern visitors.
Really?
And they're very passionate about their history.
Right. Well, everybody's pretty passionate about it. In some ways, we haven't let some of this go, right?
Well, but some of our, when you get down to the battle story, some of our most famous units, one of them is the Iron Brigade, which is Wisconsin, Michigan,
yes,
and Indiana. Those people really are passionate when they come.
And why do you think more so than maybe other people, do you know?
Well, I think because they're proud of their state heritage,
yeah,
here at Gettysburg, and I think it's because the schools do a good job of teaching it.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, what a pleasure to speak with both of you. I just love to speak with people who are so completely immersed in this history, and I can see how it would get a hold of you and not let you go. But what a wonderful thing to do in your life, to be a guide and to have given us this historical contribution. You must feel very good about it, don't you?
I'm proud. Very proud.
Yeah, you should be.
Me too. I love this place, and to think that if I could help future people study it a little bit more,
that
really makes me proud too.
Yeah, write a book. One of the things, and this isn't just a book, this is an important contribution to history. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure. The book is The Gettysburg Cyclorama, The Turning Point of the Civil War on Canvas. Chris Brenneman and Sue Boardman are the authors of the book. They are both licensed battlefield guides at the Gettysburg National Military Park, and it's quite something to become one of those guides. You got to really study for that. It was fascinating to hear Chris talk about that. Well, thanks to them, and Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this show. Thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks for listening. I'm off to Springfield, Illinois, which is one of my favorite towns. I love Gettysburg, too, with some listeners. So I won't be here tomorrow or Monday. We're going to be looking at the place where Lincoln spent almost a quarter century of his short life. And see the museum and his home and his tomb, and it should be a wonderful journey. I wish you could all go. But thanks very much to our guests, and thanks for listening. We have news coming up in just a few moments. John Munson will be with you tomorrow and Monday.